Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Pamela Sue Mann, Jenny Bill, Kathy Manzo, Alex Lefchuk, and more, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
Chapter 1. I am born. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my own life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. To begin my life with the beginning of my life, I record that I was born, as I have been informed and believe, on a Friday at 12 o'clock at night. It was remarked that the clock began to strike, and I began to cry. Simultaneously. What do the words of Charles Dickens have to do with Resonance Rewind? And should those words be burned? We'll find out in the latest edition.
Me to introduce.
Oh, may I? The Pickwick Papers, Charles Dickens.
Oh, Charles Dickens. Once I read a book he wrote. David Copperfield.
We have a David Copperfield amongst us.
He's with another group in the South. I Am the Prince by Machiavelli.
Oh.
As you see, you can't judge a book by its cover.
I am Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
I am Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
Both of you the same book?
My brother is volume one.
My brother is volume two.
It's a great pleasure to meet you.
We call the first one Pride, the other one's Prejudice. I don't think they like it much.
But there are many, many more scattered round, in abandoned railway yards, wandering the roads, tramps outwardly, but inwardly libraries. Oh, it wasn't planned. It just so happened that a man here, a man there,
loved some book, and rather than lose it, he learned it, and we came together.
We're a minority of undesirables crying out in the wilderness. But it won't always be so. One day we shall be called on one by one to recite what we've learned. And then books will be printed again. And when the next age of darkness comes, those who come after us will do again as we have done.
I have one with me.
Yes?
What is it? Let me see. Tales of Mystery and Imagination by Edgar Allan Poe.
Learn it quickly so that we can burn it.
You burn it?
Yes, of course, we have to, so that no one can take them away from us.
Yes, we burn the books, but we keep them up here, where nobody can find them.
Это был господин Вихлет, чопорный.
I'm
going to relate a tale full of horror.
The Claude, the Duc de Saint-Simon, père de France. Sa seconde femme, Unique de Sully, the Diane de Boudot.
Première
femme de mon père.
Love it. How much there is to tell.
At that moment, Mr. Pickwick.
We burn them to ashes and then burn the ashes. Yes, clearly the message is that books are not good. They create problems, mental challenges, and wouldn't it be a lot better, cousins, if we all actually just operated in our own particular viewpoint and so on. Well, we have the Pierce family represented by Stephen and Robin with us in Resonance Rewind so far. I'm sure others will join us if they can actually tear themselves away from the book and obviously burn the text that they're actually reading. Stephen, let's turn to you first. This, of course, in many ways regarded by those of us of a certain generation as a Ray Bradbury classic. And of course, Francis Truffaut was responsible for directing this particular motion picture, which has got a wealth of talent in it. Julie Christie, of course, portraying two roles. We have Oscar Werner as Guy Montag, and of course, the wonderful Cyril Cusack as a soul as well within the whole system. Plus, of course, you've got Nicholas Rogue, you've got Bernard Herrmann. I mean, in many ways, it's kind of like a dream team, but was it a dream or a nightmare for you, Stephen?
I liked the film. I liked the idea how books were banned, because when you think about it, even in today's society, with not as many people read now as they used to, I really liked the kind of parallels. The only thing I did feel with it a bit was that it was a bit jumpy in places. How, for example, the lead who went to get some books, you know, he's burning them and everything like that. Then as the movie progressed, he seemed to have more and more, quite an epic collection of books, which I didn't quite get how he got hold of so many and he's supposed to be burning them. The one thing I would say is I think it would have been better suited as like a 45-minute Twilight Zone episode rather than an hour 48-minute movie.
Interesting. Okay, Jessica, let's turn to your good self. Of course, books very much at the heart of your postgraduate work, at the heart of your undergraduate work and so on. How did you relate to this almost dreamlike structure that we see with respect to the text of Fahrenheit 451?
So I like the film. I first read Fahrenheit 451 when I was 13. We have middle school in the U.S. where it's like basically 11 to 14, 13 are separate years in a separate school, which is a horrible idea. But it meant that I was having not the best time in middle school. And then our teacher had us read Fahrenheit 451, which is a fairly bleak book. It's pretty stark. And it was just not the right time for me to read it. So every time now I meet Fahrenheit 451 media, it just like is like flashbacks to in class when I just wanted to read like a fun book. So sometimes I struggle to kind of digest that kind of atmosphere that these books have. It reminds me a lot of like Light by Ayn Rand or Anne Rand. Yeah, like that kind of atmosphere. It feels very similar to me. And I think that this was a big style that was around in the 60s and the 50s when books were being written and films were being made, kind of with this more muted color palette for dystopian films. And I think that in that sense, it is fantastic how well they captured it. I would not want to live in this world. It seems so dull. And I think that sense of there's no real violence happening a lot, but there is still this like very dark sense about it. I think that's the best part of the film to me. And watching the interview of Ray Bradbury talking about this was interesting, and kind of how so much of book burning is rooted in reality, and it's something that has occurred before in various cultures and time periods. And people still are trying to ban books in libraries and schools now. So it's very topical, even though this was made in the 60s.
We started off the episode with the quote from David Copperfield, of course, and there are actually lots of connections between what Dickens was writing as a social narrator of the 19th century in Copperfield, and of course the way in which Montag returns to his fondness for David Copperfield, because it's the death of Dora that he actually chooses as the narration that effectively brings his wife's friends, Linda's friends, to the verge of tears. And how upsetting. I mean, everything was okay. They were all sorted out with their cousins. Linda had actually been on screen. She'd actually taken part in the interactive thing in which she was said, "Linda, you're absolutely brilliant." Staring at the screen in a very strange way. Kathy Manso, your thoughts on this one?
I enjoy anything that's from Ray Bradbury personally. I've done a lot of different readings with him. So, and I think I haven't read Fahrenheit 451, I don't know, maybe 15 years. It's been a long time, but I still remember it pretty well. And that's kind of like what got me into the whole genre. I will recommend, if you guys are really into it, There Will Come Soft Rains, excellent short story. but with this film, I've never seen any of the adaptations of the book, because, you know, I'm a firm believer that the book is better. But it was a nice reminder of, I think, it just kind of similar to Jessica, it just kind of takes you back, because I remember reading that and being like, no way, impossible. And then as you get older, you're like, okay, very possible, very real. I'm also, the film itself, it's impressive that like nothing is said, or there's no words or dialogue for the first 5 minutes you're watching it. It is very much visual when you go into this. And I was considering that the whole time I was watching, like the dialogue is to a minimum. There isn't a lot of exchange happening. And I mean, and when there is, it's important. And I think that's what I really enjoyed about this this movie for myself. So I had a good time going into it.
It's a post-literate society which we have created. And interestingly enough, I saw the film before reading the book. I saw the film late on a Saturday night, and it left a mark then. And I think I've returned to it many times since then. And there is an optimistic trend, which I think possibly with the post-nuclear aspect of the book, we don't necessarily see. We don't see the robot hound, which obviously the book makes a great line of. And again, intriguing things from that. But let's find out what Pamela Sue Mann, our ace musician, makes of this particular thing, because obviously the movie launched in 1966 and England were winning the World Cup. Pamela, would you like to share? Were you actually, in essence, moved by the text? Did you find it worrying? Do you find, as you're working with getting your daughter through the next stage of college, you think, my God, this is where we are? Share with us.
Well, I have to say my daughter, Faye, is hopefully following in the footsteps of Jessica. She's a voracious reader. She cannot get enough. She had, I think, 50 books over the summer she wanted to read, and she was adamant about reaching that goal. And I think she will read anything. Right now she's reading Kant, Joan Didion, and a Murakami book, something like that. Anyway, she's outread me, which is really shameful. I have to say that I loved this film, and maybe nowadays it might be considered an art film, just in its pace. I think that he was so brilliant, and knowing a little bit of Jean Cocteau's filmmaking and looking at Truffaut, and this is not an intellectual or educated opinion, but there's so much in the imagery. There was so much in, you know, that, like, for example, they're burning the book and there's that girl's face, which was probably from a famous book. Okay. Anyway, I missed it, if so, but it was just how such attention to detail, just how the burning occurred around the face. You could tell that this was masterfully created. Whether or not a person enjoys the genre or not, I mean, for me, the films of the 60s at the same time, I find them to be kind of psychotic and a little bit frenetic and like hyper real in a way. Like, maybe people really behaved that way back then, but it seems a little unnatural in certain ways, and as does the makeup. However, I could tell in my very uneducated way that this was done with attention to detail, and this was a masterful movie making. Now, if I did read the book, I do not remember, but I just, while I was signing on, I just ordered on Amazon a copy for Faye, and I guess they have an anniversary edition, which I think has the original cover, and it's $9, and I don't know, maybe somebody's going to come to get me and burn me down with the book once it comes, but it's a scary proposition that this could ever happen, that book burning has happened for censorship, and it's not so far-fetched in a way. So I absolutely adored it. I loved it.
There were so many magical moments that, as you said, in terms of the way the cinematography was actually composed, but even, as I say, the titles of the books, the first book that we actually see being discovered in the lampshade is, of course, Don Quixote, the classic Cervantes tilting at windmill scenario. We see lots of other texts that, again, become very familiar to us as the years go by, including, obviously, Copperfield and so on, and Pickwick Papers. And, of course, again, the book people, which many people thought, what's going on with the book people? But, again, I thought the lyricism of that was just phenomenal. Jenny, Bill, your thoughts on this one?
I can't make up my mind whether I actually enjoyed this film or not. The cinematography I just thought was absolutely amazing, and the music. I loved that side of it. And as Pamela's already alluded to, I loved the way that they picked all the titles of the books that they picked were obviously not random. You know, they picked a great diversity of very famous and some controversial books. And the way they burned, you know, when they showed all the burning and the music, I just thought that was all amazing. But the actual film itself, to me, it looked very dated. And I think as Stephen already alluded to, I kept thinking, OK, he's got like a little tiny pocket thing and their backpack thing, and they're burning all these books. So how is he managing to? He had a great big textbook like open on his table. And I was thinking, how on earth did he get that back without somebody noticing that he'd taken it? And he seemed to have amassed these masses of books that he had all over the table. And I also burning of books is something that does happen, and it's absolutely horrendous. However, I was thinking, how did anybody, if they have no text, how did anybody know how to read? How could he read if there is no text in that society? How did he suddenly know how to be able to read? And I kept thinking, it's a kind of a ludicrous idea. It's a great idea, but it's also a ludicrous idea, because society couldn't really survive without some way of educating people that didn't involve text or numbers, to my mind anyway. So yeah, I loved the cinematography and the music, but I wasn't sure if I really actually liked the film itself.
I think one can say that certainly the way in which Montag amassed his collection was probably over a period of time. We don't get any sense of how long he was actually working on that side of things there. And also there was a sense that literacy was still actually being encompassed, but at the same time it was literally a case of being used as part of a control mechanism. We clearly had a totalitarian state which was very much designed to keep people equal. I mean, again, for me, really heartrending scene, the kindergarten scenario, the teaching side of things, the relevance with respect to education, not only the way in which Clarice is effectively ostracized by both her pupils and her staff, but also the way in which we also see within the playground area, the little baby with the tiny book actually effectively being removed from him from that perspective, and the sort of instant searches and so on. So anyway, lots of aspects within that. Robin, you've heard the group of thoughts that the team have put together so far. Is it a case of Montag having one quality I admire greatly? He says very little.
You know, this is going to be one of those very rare episodes where actually I don't necessarily disagree or argue with absolutely anybody. I pretty much subscribe to what everybody has said to one degree or another. I will make a confession. I had bought this film on disc a couple of years ago. I had never seen it. Never seen it. The cellophane never came off that box until yesterday morning when I sat down to watch it for the first time. And one of the reasons I had resisted watching the film was because, although a big science fiction fan, I tend not to go that much for dystopian science fiction. I'm an optimist. I'm an optimist deep down in my soul. I prefer the more Star Trek, hey, we're going to get through this and everything's going to be better. We will improve, rather than we will regress even further down the evolutionary scale, which is obviously what this film portrays. And to me personally, there is very, very little more repugnant to me as a person than the burning of books or the quashing of an idea. And we are now approaching the kind of dystopian state that Fahrenheit 451 so effectively portrayed. Because you consider this, I mean, many of my esteemed colleagues have mentioned book burning. You and I, Alex, we know full well that our beloved comic books were burnt by the thousands in the 1950s, thanks for nothing, Frederick Wertham and Seduction of the Innocent. But these days, it's still going on, and it's not only books, but within the next few weeks, if I'm correct, the British Parliament will be conducting their vote on the online safety bill, presented as a means of keeping children safe on the internet. But its powers are going to be so far-reaching, they can kill off ideas. Because the internet, let us not forget, is the world's biggest repository of man's knowledge. And the UK government want to select what you can see and what you can't. And of course, they use the means of, if you're opposing this, what have you got to hide, Mr. Pervert? But anyway, all this apart, onto the film itself. I found it missing in a few details, but absolutely engrossing throughout, because it's never mentioned what year this is. And it could be any time. It could be right now. The design of the fire engine, I thought, was so 60s. And, of course, the Hillman Imp and the Jag and all this. I found the architecture a bit jarring, that we went from somewhere that looked like the home counties in England to somewhere which was obviously French. I really dug the monorail. I want one of those. The fact that you could inform on somebody by just putting their photograph into a letterbox, you know, that was kind of, wow, that could actually happen. What really, really got me, though, on its pinpoint accuracy, other than the state of the state trying to control what you know and what you don't, was flat screen, big screen TVs and interactive TVs. I mean, my goodness, what was being shown on TV, on the screen and in their little house was uncannily similar to what I was watching the film on. You just can't get around things like that. I didn't really understand why people were calling each other cousin. I didn't really care much for Oscar Werner's portrayal at all. I felt if I've ever seen a phoned-in performance in a film, that was it. But also what I liked was the communication of ideas was practically banned, and how dumb people had become. I mean, they were just staring open-mouthed at the screen. You look at the UK on a Saturday night and see all those people watching Strictly Come Dancing. My God, people, we are already there.
It's intriguing that one of the things Truffaut actually had as a little nuanced piece was we saw in which people were so desperate for that contact that they'd actually be touching parts of their mouth, their lips, the holding sort of aspects again, just to sort of say that human contact, which was
vital. Well, I do that a lot as well, but that's because you make me nervous, Alex.
In the, again, classic dialogue that we saw here between Oscar Werner and indeed Cyril Cusack, what does Montag do on his day off duty? Not very much, sir. Mow the lawn. And what if the law forbids that? Just watch it grow, sir. And I think, you know, that ultimately is the way that the reason we have cousins as opposed to comrades is you see here this situation that actually it is almost an Animal Farm take on the whole system of equality and where things are actually presented to us. Okay, let's bounce back to Jessica again. We'll come back to Steve in a few seconds. You've listened to some of those other areas. Are there any characters that, well, I'm going to put this to the whole team, so you've got a few moments to think about it. If you were given the chance to be a book person, which book would you actually choose to represent yourself, Jessica?
That is a hard question. You know, I'd have to say probably, okay, if we're saying it's going to be a C.S. Lewis book no matter what, I think if we're going with fiction, it would be The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which is just a fantastic world. I think if we're doing a nonfiction, I think C.S. Lewis's The Screwtape Letters is one of the most incredible books I've ever read, just with how he wrote it. So I think that would be mine, because that book just had like a profound impact on me. So those two, C.S. Lewis, his work.
Well, Screwtape Letters, obviously all about channeling the spirit of the bureaucracy of Satan against the world and so on, which is, again, another theme for another time. Stephen, what would your book be?
I would have to go with Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Yep. That book in particular really hit me hard when I was reading it in school, and it's one that I enjoy a lot to this day.
I personally would go for Jonathan Livingston's Seagull by Richard Bach. Kathy?
Mine would be The Little Prince.
Antoine Saint-Exupéry. Again, yep. Very, very close to us indeed. A sort of mega moment from that. Jenny?
you know, I am very well known because I don't really read books. I don't really read fiction.
You like flat screen televisions, of course, and no, of course you like to engage with art.
I don't know where I get my information from but I do love Tennessee Williams plays, but I think if I had to pick a book, it would be To Kill a Mockingbird.
Mm. Pamela.
Oh my God, well, I've been taking notes here because there's a few different books. So I'm not going to just pick one because it's as you know, editing is not my strong point.
Well, you'd have to memorize it. You'd have to learn it. Then you can recite it when it got the chance to actually work through it.
If I drink lots of coffee, then I could be three books. So I think it would be three books. And one is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke. That's sort of in the middle. It's a very long book, so I need lots of coffee for that one. And then I'm just going to have to start taking amphetamines on this one. But I want to be a complete anthology of William Blake in his poetry and his drawings. And I want to understand all of them.
I think so that's greedy, Pat. That's too greedy.
If for dessert, I'm going to have, I don't know which one it is, but there's a Raggedy Ann and Andy book that comes along with a song, which I'm going to sing for you. And you'll understand why I want to be this book. Ann won't give Andy a piece of his candy. It's not that. Oh, no, it's sorry. Ann won't give Andy a piece of her candy. It's not that she's meaning to tease. He wants it so badly, she'd give him some gladly, but Andy forgot to say please.
This is opening up a whole new range of Resonance Rewind quality. Robin, what's your book?
Right. Fiction. It would be War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. Non-fiction. It would be my all-time favourite, A Pictorial History of the Horror Movie by Dennis Gifford, which absolutely changed my life when I was 13. Were it not for this, you'd be talking to somebody else right now.
There are so many classic moments, as we said in Fahrenheit 451. I personally was tend to get moved to tears when the young boy is reading or reciting the Weir of Hermiston to his dying grandfather, who effectively passes away after having passed that on. But let's talk characters, because that is fairly critical to the system. Where would you like to actually see? And we also, of course, in the case of Anton Dufresne and Julie Christie, have two actors who play two characters. It's almost a blink and you miss it moment with Anton Dufresne, who, as well as playing the fireman Fabian, who ultimately keeps his eye out on Montag, also plays the headmistress in an interesting gender switch elements with respect to Dufresne, etc. But who would your favourite character be, Stephen?
My favourite in this one would actually be Captain Beatty.
The Cusack.
Yeah, because I thought, as far as a villain goes, I thought he was really good because he was so convincing in his role and he was so sure of himself throughout the entire film that what he said went, and I thought he did a really good job in this one.
And his medallion was strangely captured his likeness so well. Yes. Would you like one? Hmm? He obviously forgot who was giving the medallions to. I must admit, I'd also give a mention to Alex Scott, who, of course, narrates the opening to the film, where we see those shots of the TV aerials and the lines that were actually there. But obviously his character as the book person, the life of Henri Brulard, was very much to the fore within that. Jenny, any character for yourself who stood out?
Other than the monorail, which I absolutely loved, I think, and I've forgotten his name, the lead character, the gentleman.
Oscar Werner playing Guy Montag.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. I again, even though apparently Oscar Werner had a major issue with respect to Francois Truffaut and they were barely on speaking terms for the majority of the actual text, hence the reason he also apparently cut his hair to actually ensure that continuity was a nightmare with respect to Werner, I thought actually he did well with respect to that side of things. And also, let's not forget Bea Duffel as the bookwoman, who ultimately commits suicide from her own perspective with her books, with her friends. Kathy, what about yourself in terms of favourite characters?
I'd like to give an honourable mention to Linda's friends, specifically for the line, children, how irresponsible. I couldn't have agreed more. So So I wanted to put that up there. But I guess as my favorite character, I agree with Steven. I thought the captain was just so eerie and so true to himself. Like, he really was comfortable with exactly who he was, and it was seen throughout consistently.
Yes, I mean, Montag's line about Monday we burn Miller, Tuesday Tolstoy, Wednesday Walt Whitman, Friday Faulkner, Saturday and Sunday Schopenhauer and Sartre. Didn't actually burn anything on Friday, so maybe obviously it was like fish on Fridays. It was the sort of thing that they didn't actually do any book burning on Friday. Maybe that was when they had a chance to obviously watch their widescreen TVs. Pamela, your favourite character?
Well, sushi involves no fire, so maybe they ate sushi on Friday. That's not my favorite character. There's not a character called Sushi, although that would have been really kind of fun. I would say I'm going to be boring and say Clarice, because she opened up his eyes, and I just loved her spirit. I'd say she's the one. I mean, Oscar Bernard, is that how you pronounce his name? Yeah. I don't know. I just find him visually captivating. I mean, of course, Julie Christie is as well. But I'd say Clarice. She's the one.
Well, if anyone asks how old I was, to say I was 20 years old and light in the head, which is, of course, the advice that Clarice's uncle actually gave her. And you'd go for Clarice as opposed to Linda, because, again, I have to say, first time I saw it, it took a couple of times before I realised that Julie Christie actually played both characters, both the wife of Montag.
I noticed that straight away. Well, her bouffant, I was trying to figure out whether it was a wig or that was her hair, because Faye's been going for a 60s kind of thing, and I'm trying to cut her hair like that, but I'm like, actually maybe it's a wig. But the one thing that I did forget to say is just how stunningly beautiful it was, the whole idea that people are books. And again, in Susanna Clarke's book, I wonder if she gets it from that, because there is a character there, spoiler, who is a book, like literally a book. The book is written on him. His book. And then, well, I won't spoil it. Anyway, you should read the book.
Robin, your favourite character and incarnation for this?
I have two. One on screen, one off. Hey, if Pamela can have multiple favourites, so can I. Right. My number one favourite was off screen, and it was Bernard Herrmann's absolutely stunning score. It just so evocative and just so understated, I think is what I'm trying to say. My favourite on-screen character was the book lady who was burnt to death along with her books, because she died for her ideals. And the very end of the film, where we see these book people, everybody has memorised a book, is such an elegant way of conveying the notion that you can't kill an idea. You can burn the book, but the idea is still in people's heads.
And Jessica, did you share with us your favorite person?
Not yet. But I do want to say, just like that, Robin reminded me about the book memorization. But it just reminds me that in so many cultures before, literacy is something that kind of they started to do. Like in Britain, for example, like they would have spoken stories like Beowulf. We think of that as a book. It's a written poem, but that's actually originally it was spoken, and someone would listen to that and memorize the whole story, and then they would speak it to someone else. So all of us listened, our ancestors very long ago would all listen to stories and tell them, and that's how they used to be passed on. So I think that's very interesting. But my favorite character is Montag, because he had the most character growth, and he started as a villain to a lot of people, but in the end he kind of realized the truth of society, and I think that's a big deal, that his whole world changed. So I think he's my favorite.
And of course, it brings us neatly round, Jessica, to I think the first seminar that we had when I was when you joined us over at Lincoln. We talked about Walter Ong and the whole question of orality and the whole notion of how Ong effectively said that notion of how knowledge is transposed. I think what we have here again at the end with that wonderful sequence of the book people is that whole sense of orality, still being aware of communicating ideas and surviving. But it has brought us to, of course, the scores on the proverbial widescreen cousins. So, Kathy, what's yours?
I'm going to give this a 8.5. I would have given it a little higher. It was visually beautiful, but I do agree that there is a little bit of a pacing, kind of what Robin brought up earlier. So I'm going to say 8.5.
Well, I can appreciate why Steven Spielberg was so keen to work with Francois Truffaut in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, given this obviously was a key aspect of that. And indeed, Truffaut's very own text, Cahiers du Cinéma, wearing his hat as a film critic, was also being burnt in the whole sequence. Those film study students who are familiar with basic studies of the French analysis, etc., will certainly acknowledge the importance of Cahiers du Cinéma within the field. Pamela, your score, please.
Because of its enigmatic qualities, I want to give it a 10, because I wouldn't even know how to begin to do that on any level. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to give it a 9.75, and I'll tell you why. I'm taking off the whatever the math is.
0.25.
Thank you. Because the woman who was amazing actor that died in the fire, she didn't really die in the fire, but she was the stoic martyr. They did her roots and her color wasn't good. I mean, it was the roots didn't match the ends, and it was really bothering me that they should have gotten a more qualified hair person for film so that it wouldn't be so wrong. I mean, you're looking at someone with partially purple hair, but that said, I have to take points off just for that. But as far as that, otherwise it's just perfect.
I will give it a 10. Stephen, your thoughts or your score?
I think I'd give it a 7. I loved the film and the idea, but I just thought that some of the pacing was a little bit off.
I think that's part of the charm, to be honest. But Jessica?
I think I'm giving it an 8.5, just because I do prefer the narrative in the book a bit more. And I missed the robo dog. Where was he?
The robot hand.
Yeah, but otherwise it was very well done.
Okay, and Jenny?
I think I'm going to give it a 6. And can I just mention also that I can't stand Julie Christie, so that kind of wasn't a great thing about the film either.
I would like to point out that Jenny just gave a score above a 5, so...
Yeah, but then she did award 10 to Space Patrol, which again shocked Robin and his absentia. Robin, your score for this one, please.
It's a film that I should have watched a long, long time ago. It has flaws.
You didn't see it on BBC Two then in the 1970s. What were you doing on that Saturday night?
Well, I would have been a teenager. I would have probably been out somewhere getting drunk and chasing girls. Who knows? Let's see. Yeah, it's a film I should have watched a long, long time ago. And it's one that's definitely left a mark. And, it hit a lot of my triggers. It was really well done, but kind of in part poorly executed, I felt. So I'm going to go with 7. Actually, yeah, the House of Pierce is in agreement on this one.
Next week, we have another actor who's responsible for dual roles in the episode, or at least the text we're going to be looking at. That's the late, great David Warner, of course, known to both Robin and myself, where he actually plays two villains in the arguably opening of the whole cyberspace era, courtesy of William Gibson and many other activities. Of course, it's the first incarnation of Tron that we'll be exploring as far as Resonance Rewind is actually concerned. And it seems that Pamela will be obviously on the button when it comes to analysing hairstyles, haircuts, and indeed sort of onset hairdressers. Indeed, when it comes to
good luck, they all wear helmets.
I have to share something with you all because we know each other well enough, and so everyone can know this. My one brother, I have older brothers who tortured me. That's why I am the way I am. And my one brother is called Ron, and my other brother Mark, still to this day, calls my brother Ronnie Tron. Like, that's his name, is Tron.
And that's just part of the reveals that come out of Resonance Rewind, as we thank Kathy Manso, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill, Stephen Pierce, Robin Pierce, and of course, Pamela Suman. keep watching the movies, obviously, but more importantly, keep on resonating. Here's some more Bernard Herrmann.